Finance and Budget Committee. One last time. We bring her back. Just when you thought you were out. Looks like we've got about four different items on here, and the first is the approval of personnel actions. FD number one, I will entertain a motion on approval of those personnel actions, which are in your materials. Motion second.
Second.
Ann?
No real comments on these routine personnel actions for new hires and supplemental pay.
Any member of the committee have any questions, comments? Anybody else? There being nothing, no further discussions or comments, then all members of the committee in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Second action item is FD2. That's the acceptance of the third quarter statement of revenue and expenditures. Areas 2 and 4 handout. I will entertain a motion for approval of the third quarter statement of revenue and expenditures.
So moved.
Motion, second.
Second.
Ann?
Yes. Looking at third quarter of this fiscal year, you'll see what we have highlighted related to changes in enrollment, with the most significant variance being 2% off of budget for tuition, and that's approximately $3 million. The rest of revenue is tracking pretty consistently to the previous fiscal year. I would note on the expenditures side that where you see on page 4, your unrestricted E&G expenditures at about 65.6% of budget. What I note from previous years is the percentage of budget is down slightly, indicating some conservative efforts on the expenditure side, mostly related to vacant lines that have not been filled and are budgeted. As I indicated in my budget presentation, I have looked at May data, and we are being conservative again on our expenditures. The other items, as we note, on other revenue and impacted on the other expenditures are program related revenues, and on those items they are responsible for keeping their expenditures in line with the program revenue that they bring in. Does anyone have any questions?
Committee members? Anybody else have any comments, questions? Hearing none, then I will call for a vote on the motion. Members of the committee present, signify approval by saying aye. Opposed, like sign. Motion unanimously carries. Action item FB number 3 is approval of parking and transportation reserve allocation. Page 5 of your material. I will entertain a motion for approval of the parking and transportation reserve allocation. Motion second. Motion second. Ann?
Yes. Consistent with our carry forward policy, some key programs are allowed to hold funds for reserve for more significant expenditures. And parking and transportation is an important area that does everything possible to be self-supporting. All of their buses and maintaining the parking lots that you're on campus later this summer, you'll see work. So the reserve is an important aspect for the financial management of our parking program, and they have a reserve of slightly more than $900,000. The request, what you have today, is to approve the allocation from their reserve of $275,000 for refurbishing two buses. We're pleased to bring this forward because this is a more cost-effective way of maintaining our fleet of buses, as opposed to approximately $400,000, which it would cost to buy a new bus. So our request is approval for draw from the reserve.
Anybody have any questions? Comments? Hearing none, I will ask for a vote on the motion. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. The motion carries. Here we go to action item FB number 4, approval of 2019-20 audit plan. Entertain a motion.
So motion.
Okay.
Second.
Motion, second. And Miller's now in her role. As it took a lot of time.
I'm back. Okay, so you have a copy of the draft audit plan for next fiscal year. And historically, we always have at least two, maybe three projects that roll forward. And that's the same with this year, so that's your first group. These are things that you put for the current year that we're in, and we're rolling those forward because we just didn't get to have some time. And some of the hours have been adjusted because we have started on some of these projects, so they're kind of in process already. But that's the first group. Second group is the annual projects that we do every year. Some of those include the NCAA group on procedures that we do for the external auditors, President's T&E that we look at every year, and a couple of other things on there. The third group is the risk-based projects. The first one is information technology. It's an IT risk assessment and a compliance piece. We haven't been in projects together with IT probably in about a year, so we want to get back into that area. And we haven't done a specific risk assessment that's IT related, so we want to get into that part as well and look at the framework that they use to do security and different things like that. So we want to make sure that we're compliant with that framework. So that's that project. The second one is the Office of Sponsored Programs, looking specifically at the fees for service agreement process, which is basically when we have areas that are generating revenue and we have an agreement with an outside entity, that's the fees for service. We want to look at that process and make sure we understand how we come into those agreements, how they're monitored, and then how we close it out. And the third one is philanthropy and alumni engagement. So we're talking about, we did this year with the College of Human, oh my gosh, CHHS, sorry. It's been a long one. So we talked about changing in leadership and the risks that are there with that is in itself. So we had leadership changes, and we want to look at their business processes to make sure that they're in compliance, and we have a roadmap for the new person coming in to say, here's some things that you might want to look at, and we'll be able to work with them in that manner. So those are the three risk-based projects. We still have time for any ad hoc projects that may come up during the year, which they always do. We also have time on here for just administrative duties that we deal with. And then one thing that's on here that's new, but I've been talking about it for years, is it's finally happening. Someone's going to come in and audit the office. So we, as part of our standards, we have to have a quality assessment review every 5 years. And we've already done some pre-planning with an external person. This person is the current president of the Institute for Internal Auditors Nashville chapter. She is local, so the cost for this is zero, which is great. But she has done these QARs in the past for other organizations, so she has experience. She will come in and do this process. It includes looking at our documentation. It includes interviewing stakeholders, so some of you may be involved in that. And also the president's cabinet members, some of them will be involved in that as well. So that whole process will take place, I believe, next month. And like I said, we've already done some pre-planning on that, but I've been talking about this for about 5 years now, so it's time. And I'm excited because we're going to learn if we're in general compliance, partial compliance, or the things that we need to do better so that we can add value to the university as a whole. So I'm really looking forward to figuring out, you know, where we need to improve. So that's included on there as well so that we can make sure that we have hours to work on that project as well. So
Yes, you have a question?
Question. Jennifer, with respect to your IT risk assessment, are you going to utilize outside experts in any county?
I do not believe so. I think that that's something that we can handle. We've gone to different trainings, and we work really well with IT. And I don't think it's something that you have to have IT experience for that, because basically the premise is we're doing a risk assessment. And it's not that I have to know about how a firewall works.
Is there going to be any intrusion testing in your assessment?
No, not necessarily. But we'll be looking at, potentially that's one of the things that we'll talk about within that assessment to see if that does happen, how often, or if we need to do something like that. If that's the case, it won't be internal audit doing that actual testing.
Okay. All right, we need to do intrusion testing. I don't know. Somebody needs to be doing it.
Greg, do you want to speak to that?
Sure. The last intrusion test we did was in 2018, I believe. I've been in discussions with some other universities about potentially doing some intrusion testing of each other, for example, as a cost savings measure, but I am budgeting for that in the upcoming year for another intrusion test for fiscal year 20.
Have we had any incidents?
No.
Penetration or data breaches?
No, nothing significant that would require reporting at the state level or anything. I mean, you always have compromised email accounts and little things like that, but no, nothing significant
at all. Do you maintain documentation for all of that as well as your anytime you do it?
Yes, we have full documentation of the last one. We also maintain documentation of any incidents that occur, of any compromises and things like that within our service management system.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Anybody else? Committee or anybody? Any other region? Any comments or questions? Hearing none, I will call for a vote on the motion. All committee members in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. So that takes care of the action items. First, two information items, quarterly internal audit report. Again, Ms. Chairman.
So you have the information item in front of you, I think, and it has the three projects that we were able to complete, along with the other things that are currently in progress. You can see that list as well. So briefly, we'll just talk through these. The inventory surplus process audit was, we basically went in to look at how you get assets onto campus, how they get booked, they get used up, and then how do we dispose of those and how that's taken care of also in the book. So we walked through that process from the beginning to the end. And you can see there we had a total of 16 recommendations. It includes two different divisions, also with some IT-related pieces in there. So we were working with two different areas in that realm. There were 9 rated medium, 7 rated low, and I don't think that the entire committee got a copy of that report because that was done before we changed that process. So if you want a copy of that, I'll give that to you.
Come up with the election.
Okay. The other two listed are related, and you did receive a copy of those two reports. I'll start with the safety audit. So this is talking about when our students go abroad with a program leader, a faculty member. They have assistant leaders that go as well. And so inherently, this is a high-risk area in itself because we're sending our students overseas potentially, which is a risk area. And you hear about stories about things that could potentially happen or that have happened to students in the past. So we did have 19 recommendations, with 9 of those being rated high. But again, this is a high-risk area overall, so that's to be expected. I'm not going to go through each of these individually because there's 9 of them, but they are grouped in just a summary. So we had 4 areas that were related to providing certain training to the program leaders and the assistant leaders to make sure that they're well prepared. So training about emergency preparedness, communication, Title IX, Clery Act, things like that. We want to make sure that that's more comprehensive and that they understand their responsibilities in that. So that's part of that. And then also within that same category of 4, there's one that's related to documenting procedures so that we have that control there that makes it easy to say this is how we do it, this is the expectations, and it's consistently done across programs. And that one, I think, is specifically about emergency evacuations from somewhere where we are abroad. We know what we need to do if there is some sort of emergency evacuation that's necessary. The second group that had 1 high rating is basically focused on the student training instead of the program leaders and assistant leaders. We're talking about how do we train our students to be more aware, to understand what their responsibilities are in communicating with their program leader or whoever it may be. And this specifically was talking about programs that last less than 8 weeks. They weren't necessarily going through the same trainings as people that were going abroad for longer. We want to make sure that everybody's on the same page, no matter how long they're going to be abroad. The last group is emergency preparedness, incident reporting, and communication, which is exactly what we're talking about. And there were 4 risks there, or 4 observations there that were rated high. And we're talking about making sure that when things happen abroad that they are doing some kind of reporting of that to make sure that everyone here is aware of things that we might want to take into consideration the next time that they go abroad. And that's a very quick summary of this report. So we do have a copy of that. I don't know if you have any other questions that I haven't addressed already.
I think you noted in your report and in the conversation we had earlier, there's been leadership change in this department.
Yes.
And this is somewhat still a work in process.
It is. And, I think that that's been a process over the last couple of years that there's been a change in leadership. The person that's over it now, he has very much experience in international and abroad. He's moving in the right direction. We've met with him. We've gone over his reports. And he's already made a lot of the changes that we recommended as well, but then he has some recommendations of his own. I know they are moving in the right direction.
The reason I ask that, Chair Johnson, I know that this audit, there is an unusual number of high findings.
Right.
We need to direct our attention to.
And like I said, I think some of that is because of what we're dealing with. I mean, we're talking about our students and sending them abroad to foreign countries, and that's inherently risky in itself. We want to make sure that we're doing everything. We want to have tight controls around that process to make sure that they stay safe when they're there and they know exactly what they need to do, and that, you know, we try to mitigate some of those things that could go wrong.
Anybody else?
I have a general question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A broad question, which I think confirms our board's fiduciary responsibility. Just to put a record to today, answers the 3 questions. Do you feel that you have the independence to conduct your audits? Number 2, do you have the support of the administration? And number 3, do you feel like you've got uninhibited direct lines of reporting back to this board?
Yes, to all 3. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Jay, I think you have.
I do. So it's related. We have a faculty-led study away, study abroad program, and this was a process audit. So we're talking about how you request a program to be initiated, how we monitor that program, how we pay for the program, how we get students to apply, all of that. So we walked through that process, and there were 10 total recommendations. 4 of those were rated high. And just basically, again, to tighten up controls around the process, some things were not consistently done. And that causes issues, and also some things were not consistently monitored. So we want to tighten the controls on a specific program called the American Traveler, which is when we are allowing non-student or non-credit participants to go on these programs. And we want to make sure that those controls are tightened. And so they're doing some action plans that we recommended for that, and also taking it further and putting an application online. It used to be a paper application. So they're making strides to make sure that is a tighter process than it was in the past. Another one was we recommended physically relocating the faculty-led study abroad staff members. They were in a different building, and we're basically determining that was an issue for students and potentially program leaders. They weren't sure which office to go to, and they were dislocated from each other, one on top of the hill or one in the middle of the hill and one down at the end of the hill or the bottom. So we wanted to have a centralized operation for that, so there would be less confusion and less risk of losing information or not providing the correct information in the right office. And they've already done that. They are physically relocated centrally. The next one would be to create a more comprehensive closeout process. So when the faculty-led program returns to the university campus, what did that process look like to make sure that we're checking off all the boxes to say, I've done this, I've reconciled this, this is all taken care of. So there was a closeout process. It just wasn't. To make me feel good that the risk was not as high as it should be. So that's also an action plan for them to create that more comprehensive closeout process. And then they had guidelines set up for the faculty-led programs to kind of guide them through how the process works. But because they were guidelines, I don't think that they were being followed consistently by each program. So we suggested that those become actual policies and procedures, not just guidelines. And they're in the process of reviewing that and to make that more also comprehensive in the way that it speaks to how we, the policies that we prefer for them to use and how we get to that place with the procedures. So that's that in a nutshell as well, and I know that was fast. These programs now are centrally located, and I think overall that is going to be a better way to manage and have oversight over the actual processes that we're just talking through right now.
I have one more. I just experienced this. So I have one more comment since you introduced the IT exam. As you do the audit, you need to check to see about ransomware and all those aspects, and whether we have a crisis management team in place in case that happens, and then they need to actually do a test. They need to create a situation, document what happens, response time, that sort of stuff. I say that because if we have that situation, obviously we've got to fix it, but more importantly, from a legal liability standpoint, show that standard of care with respect to the kinds of confidential information that is in the system. That may I guess the question is, it may already be in place, but if it's not, I would encourage that that system get tested at least once a year. There's a surprise attack on the system, computers are down, requests for bitcoins, it's going out, you've got 12 hours or whatever, document your response team, those sorts of things.
I have one question about this study fraud issue. In the case up here in the board about some of this appropriation funds involving a faculty member on the study fraud case. And my understanding of this was part of the reason this arose in the first place was unclear oversight procedures. And I'm confident that such a case occurred again because of having power regulations.
I think that the risk is lower with us tightening the control. I'm not going to say it's never going to happen,
sure.
Because there's always a way around, of course. But it's my perception that with the new leadership and the restructuring, that these things will be put into place, where they already have a lot of them. And we'll be able to go back and follow up with that to make sure, because that's one of the things that we do anyway, is follow up with these action plans on a quarterly and annual basis. But there's also the option to go back in and do a follow-up audit to make sure that the things that they put into place is working. But I think the risk is lower, a lot lower.
Okay, thanks. David, did you have
something? I do not. Anybody else? I want to make one comment. This is a group thing. I'm sorry, but what Regent Higdon just commented about, I think is probably a serious potential problem. I don't know, just Commonwealth of Kentucky, see what's happening for it. So I want to encourage that we keep it our eyes open. Do you have any comments?
Just that, as part of the process we use for emergency management services, we are regularly engaging in tabletop exercises and other exercises to make sure we're able to have an integrated crisis response as an institution. Given my background in public affairs and my understanding of ICS training, it was one of the first questions I asked. I didn't want to read what the policy procedures are. I want to understand how the organization was being responsive and proactive in preparation. And so Dr. Oliver and Emergency Management Services does a terrific job at regularly putting his team and a broader institutional representation through tabletop exercises and test cases. We will again gather leadership, cabinet, and others for another training at the beginning of the academic year. We've done this each year since I've been here now. And it's an important reminder that you can never be too prepared. And so absolutely something that, while the odds of something catastrophic occurring are small, if they do and you're not prepared, it's awful.
Anybody have anything else? Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, we're winding down here. And would it be possible to ask you to come back up to the presenter's chair for a moment? There were several questions that I have not been answered.
Are we called to the principal's office?
You've been called to the principal's office. Everybody knows that this is Ann's last budget. Last run through the gauntlet, is that correct? When I was first appointed to this board, the person who introduced me to the inner workings of this university was Ann Dean. I've had the outstanding honor to work with you as chair of the finance and budget for the last 3 years. And what I've learned from Ann is that a university succeeds through its budget and its financial management. And that requires leadership, skilled management. this university could not be more blessed to have a person at the helm of its finances than you. And you've guided us through some good times and some rough times. And I know that either whether it's good times or rough times, they're not always easy times. Finances and the successful budgets are the lifeblood that runs through the veins of this university. No student graduates, no faculty member teaches, no university staff manages without a successful budget, without strong financial stewardship. And Ann has been and is that steward. It takes knowledge, it takes experience to do what you do, Ann, for this university. However, Ann, I think you bring more than just knowledge and experience. You've given this university dedication, passion, and sincere love. Budgets are more than just numbers. They're more than just expenditures. They're more than allocations. They're more than just two and two equals whatever. Each decision, each recommendation and that you make and that you have made is based upon the people and the lives and the students and the faculty and the staff it affects. And that is very, very obvious throughout this. Not one student who has come through our doors, who's climbed our hill to succeed either as an undergraduate, a graduate, associate degree, or certificate, would have achieved that success had it not been in part for all that you've done. That's dedication, hard work, passion, and love. You're a part of that team and that team spirit. And I think it really defines the meaning of the spirit that makes the master. And thank you is not enough. But you need to take with you this one truism. The WKU students have and are achieving great and wonderful things as a result of your dedication, your hard work, your vision, and most important, your love for this university. Thank you. Thank you very much. One question that she did not get answered, I'm going to answer it. And the answer is yes. So if you come up here.
There's a story behind that because this is a very dear piece, and I said, do I get my mirror?
And the answer is yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Get my mirror. Thank you. If I could just have just a couple minutes of your time. I'm finishing a 44-year career in higher education finance, and the best of it has been 25 years at Western Kentucky University. When I came here 25 years ago, I didn't know much about WKU. And I remember doing a presentation to an advisory board, which was majority WKU graduates. And I said, I have to be honest with you, I have one degree from one of those research universities north of here, and I also have a degree from the other one. But don't blame me for the mistakes of youth. So I embarked on a journey here, and I can tell you because I know all three universities, and some of you may be graduates of them as well, What I witnessed here is absolutely remarkable. A love for this university that far surpasses athletic programs. You know, I have plenty of friends that are big red fans and big blue fans, but when it comes to a passion for their university, it really doesn't go much past the successful athletic programs. And when I came here, I found
alums, employees, students, people in the community that had just a genuine love and a commitment for what we're doing here and contributing to its growth and reaching out to students in the most remarkable way. So while Dr. Birch tried to get me into the doctoral program, perhaps I ought to take one course and become an official alum, it's been a remarkable place. I can also tell you that, if you don't mind for one or two minutes, when you look over 44 years and you look over your life, this is closing more than a chapter. I reflect on paraphrasing a Greek philosopher that said, the best is achieved in life when you realize your potential, you live up to your values, and you follow your conscience. Well, focusing today on realizing my potential, I didn't come here ready to be vice president for finance administration and be a leader. It was so many people that believed in me more than I believed in myself, including some board members and presidents. But along the way, I've had a remarkable team of individuals to work with that saw that I had that potential, and we worked as a team together. So I have so many people I could thank for allowing me to actually fulfill my potential. And if I start naming them, I'll miss somebody, and I'll be sad that I did. But I can also tell you that, not to tell you my whole life history, but I started out in a circumstance that individuals told my parents that they needed to find a vocation for me because I didn't have the IQ to finish high school. So throughout your life, as you think, and you all share the same experience I have as wrapping up a career, take the time to reflect back to those individuals, teachers, mentors, your parents, people along the way that truly helped you realize your potential. And it's not about me and realizing my potential, even though I feel great pride that I was able to do this, but the recognition that we do this together. And I've been asked questions about what was your number one accomplishment at WKU. And I just paused and said, no, I don't have a number one accomplishment. We do. We do. And I am very grateful to have been part of this university, to work with this exceptional board. And you truly have changed my life, and I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Knows. He's not going away. He's still going to be here.
So I will be working on my course this summer, and will continue serving by teaching a class of freshman students in August. I look forward to being here.
We're going to be in for a treat. Well, I don't have anything further. That takes care of the Finance and Budget Committee meeting. I don't believe there's anything else on the agenda. So there's no need to ask for adjournment. We will adjourn.